you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to Money for the Rest of Us, a personal finance show on money, how it works, how to invest it, and how to live without worrying about it. I'm your host, David Stein, and today is episode 62. It's titled, Collapsing Bees, Bubbles, and Income Inequality. Back in 2007, just before the Great Recession and the near collapse of the financial system, there was a different type of collapse that had farmers and food suppliers really, really worried and really, really perplexed. Honeybee colonies were collapsing. And it wasn't just that they were collapsing with bees on the ground. The hives were abandoned and the bees went completely missing. It was as mystery as deep as the merchant ship Mary Celeste, which I hadn't heard of. Back in 1872, there was this vessel, sailing vessel, that landed in the Azores Islands. Is that how you pronounce that? Azores? Azores? I've not been there. It landed there on the beach, completely seaworthy, but with the crew missing. No captain, no crew, no lifeboat. They could never figure out what happened to them. The same thing was happening to beehives. They'd see these beehives and they would be completely empty. And I remember in 2007, this hitting the news, it was all over, and every news story had this ominous warning that one out of every three bites of food was dependent on the honeybee. And I thought if we were going to have massive failure, crop failure, perhaps starvation. And then the financial crisis hit. I got involved in my business and pacifying clients and trying to figure out how to make our way and navigate the financial markets. And I forgot all about the bees. I hadn't really thought about it. I did notice there was still food at the grocery store, copious amounts of nuts, berries, vegetables, and other fruits. And last week, we were at a dinner party, and my neighbor mentioned that he had a new beehive, that there was a swarm of bees that had come around his house, and he essentially knocked them from the branch into a box and created this beehive, and then had one a little later. So now he has three beehives because we had other bees swarming around his neighbor's house. I thought that was interesting. It reminded me of the fact that are bees still collapsing? So I did an internet search and came across a tweet, actually, that came across my stream. And it was about that bee, essentially the tweet said, bees were literally worrying themselves to death. And the tweet linked to a pretty insightful article by David Wallace Wells. It's published in the New York Magazine titled, The Blight of the Honeybee. And he talked about this whole history of colony collapse with the honeybees and what scientists are thinking, linked to a couple of scientific articles. I'll link to this and those articles in the show notes. Well, apparently honeybees are still suffering massive die-offs. According to the Bee and Foreign Partnership and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, beekeepers lost 42% of their colonies in the past year. In the year before that, they lost 34%. In the year before that, 46%. Now, you and me both know, if you're losing that percent of your bee colonies or your money, you're going to be bankrupt within a few years, unless there's a way to replenish it. And that turns out to be the case. Queen bees are remarkably prolific. They can produce enough bees in a single year to create a brand new colony. In fact, many bees, worker bees, some drones, only live a few weeks. So the queen who survives, she survives and creates all these bees. And so Yeah, there's been dramatic and horrendous percentage losses in beehives, but the beekeepers are creating new hives just as fast as the old ones are dying. And that's why we still have food supply in the grocery store. But the question remains, why are the bees dying? So scientists have been working on it. And one of the first things I learned is it's not really the wild bees that are collapsing. It's the managed bees, the industrial bees. In fact, most managed, when I say managed bees, I'm talking about hives that are loaded on trucks and carted from field to field, county to county, and state to state to pollinate the produce. These are definitely worker bees. Trucker bees is how David Wallace Wells put it. Bust from field to field, and it's these managed bees that are dying off. And so these managed beekeepers, a lot of these family beekeepers are having to figure out, you know, what is it about? And as scientists have worked on it, there's a couple of things that they have found. One article was published just this year in Science Magazine. It's called Bee Declines Driven by Combined Stress from Parasites, Pesticides, and Lack of Flowers. It's written by Dave Golson, Elizabeth Nichols, Christina Botias, and Ellen Rotheray. And what they found was it was multiple stressors that were impacting the bees. If you travel for a living, you know travel can be really, really stressful. You're cooped up in airplanes. You got all those germs and other pathogens floating around. And bees face the same thing. As they're traveling from place to place, cooped up, well, I don't know the extent bees get cooped up in a hive, but certainly they're moving on these truck beds, and they're taken to the almond fields. And for 3 weeks, they'll binge on almond nectar and almond blossoms. And then they'll be taken to cherry fields and then alfalfa fields or blueberries. And they go, and they're sort of these migrant worker bees. And they have chronic exposure to various pesticides. And so what scientists believe, it's a combination of all these stressors. It's the exposure to the pesticides. It's the mono source of foods, the lack of diversity in their diet, the eating the same thing for 3 weeks in a row and then going and switching to another item and binging on that for 3 weeks. That's unnatural. And this chronic exposure makes them weak and susceptible to various pathogens or parasites that can harm the bees. And what's interesting about it is, well, that explains why they're dying, but where are they going? And there's another study that was put together by Clint Perry, Eric Sovak, Mary Meyerkoff, and Andrew Barron. It's titled Rapid Behavioral Maturation Accelerates Failure of Stressed Honey Bee Colonies. I'll also link to that in the show notes. They actually radio track bees, so I don't know if they put collars on them, but somehow they were able to track these honeybees. And what they found was it was, and I love this term, they were precocious foragers. They foraged precociously, which is another way of saying they left the hive too early. What they found was the way that these bees reacted to these multiple stressors, and many of these stressors compounded, so they interacted, the various pesticides might interact with each other, with the pathogens, and these stressors cause bees to leave the hive at a younger age than they typically would to go forage. And then these young foragers tended to have very high death rates. They'd crash, and they wouldn't return. And so a very high percentage, when they left, did not have successful first flights, as the article mentioned, and wouldn't return. And so a lot of the foragers wouldn't return, and so the hive would have to send out even younger foragers to the point where they didn't return. They sent out more, and you had what's called a positive feedback loop. As more and more foragers went out, didn't return until all that was left was the queen, her remaining brood, and perhaps a few adults. That is a positive feedback loop. And what a positive feedback loop is, it's a self-reinforcing pattern that leads a system further and further from its equilibrium until it potentially collapses. That's what's happening with the beehives. It continues. The bees, these managed bees trucked around, are being stressed out by the various pesticides, parasites, pathogens, lack of food diversity. It's causing some panic. They're leaving the hive early. They're foraging too early. And they're not making back, and you have colony collapse. We have positive feedback loops in our economy and in the financial system. That's what caused asset bubbles. Think about the housing bubble. What causes that? Or other asset bubbles. Investors in an equilibrium market, a normal market, investors are making independent judgment, independent assessments of what they think a particular security is worth. You have buyers and sellers, they're meeting of the minds, they come up with a price, and that's a normal market. At times, though, investors abandon their own independent judgment and do what they say. Sometimes they say they follow the smart money. They're trying to mimic what other investors are doing, because they believe those other investors have a better sense of where markets are heading. And so that, as you have that mimicking behavior, that tends to push up asset prices. That attracts new entrants into the market who don't want to miss out on this rapid price appreciation. So you have this positive feedback loop of this mimicking behavior. At the same time, you have industry players and other institutions that see this market opportunity. To some extent, they take advantage of the naivety. Going to leave it at that. Naivety, the naive market entrance. Interesting how you can read something to your mind, and then when you produce it out loud, it comes out completely botched. But these new market entrants, they see that. And you had house flippers, you had speculators, you had this financial infrastructure that was processing and selling mortgage loans, often with unverified income, minimal documentation, dubious appraisals, and that all pushed up prices until at some point there's something switches, there's a flip, there's a tipping point, and people want to get out, and that supply-demand imbalance, where you have huge demand, perhaps a limited supply, reverses, and you don't have as much demand, you have that huge supply, and prices plummet. We saw that, but that was a positive feedback loop. And positive feedback loop, that sounds like, well, that's a good thing. Well, often they're not, because it can cause a system to spin completely out of control. In the case of bees, 50 years ago, we didn't cart bees around the way we do now. That is something that has really taken effect in the last half century. And it's one reason you can get fruits and vegetables throughout the country, throughout the world. When we were in Sweden and Norway, there were cherries there from Washington State. There were fruit from Chile. I thought it was just the U.S. that got fruit from Chile. Apparently, that's sent over to Europe also. And so we're used to having this fruit and berries and vegetables all year round that's been facilitated by these worker bees. But now you're seeing the impact of these stressors. And so they're really not sure exactly. They're just figuring out what to do, and they haven't solved the problem yet. One thing they could do was, if we focused more in terms of our food on local sources and not be... So one of the issues with complexity and these positive feedback loops is when you have errors that cascade throughout the system, right? So you have all these bees coming together. They're all focused. I mean, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of bees are around the almond orchards being exposed to the pathogens and being together and intermingling. Perhaps that is creating it. So you have this. It's not local in the sense that errors and pathogens can spread very, very quickly from hive to hive. Whereas if an error is made at the local level, so there's not a contagion effect, is what I'm trying to say, there can be some benefit of that. And so trying to get your food from local sources is critical if you can, as opposed to always going to California where they're suffering a major drought. So you want diversity. You want diversity of your crops. You want diversity of your food supply. You want diversity in your diet. When you look at these bees eating the same thing for weeks, that's just not healthy, because there's a lot we don't understand about nutrition from what I've seen. And so eating a variety of foods, in the case of acid markets, having your own opinion and not following the crowd, when we don't have diversity of opinion and independent judgment, that can also lead to problems. And certainly reducing stressors. Stressors can be okay. Some stress is fine when it's intermittent. It's chronic stress that can lead to problems. Let me pause here to share some words from this week's sponsors. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. In my professional life, I've seen how important it is to have quality candidates to interview so we could find the right hire. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/David. That's linkedin.com/David to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Quick math: the less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. With everything seeming to get more expensive these days, you need to find proven ways to cut cost and boost performance at the same time. And NetSuite can help with that. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/David. That's netsuite.com/David. netsuite.com/David. Now, I want to switch topics a little bit. So we're talking about positive feedback loops. In the case of oftentimes, it is crowd following. There can be a contagion effect. Sometimes it's called an information cascade. Sometimes it's caused by intervention. We have this huge intervention in terms of these bees. We've not done this before. In fact, the honeybee isn't even native to the U.S. That was brought here to bring in honey, and then they found that, hey, these are great for pollinating crops. Let's systematize it. Let's make a big industrial food complex out of it. I read a post on LinkedIn the other day by Diego Espinosa, and he's the founder of Sistema Research. I don't know him personally, but it's a complex system-based consulting firm. And his post or his essay was called Information, Ants, and Inequality. And it caught my attention because I was thinking about bees, and I saw that. And he made some interesting points about ants that also apply to bees. Bees and ants use compressed information to make decisions. So an ant leaves its anthill and forages. It just doesn't forage randomly. It's looking for pheromones from another ant that has left sort of a little message that says the food is over here. So it's compressed information. Bees do the same thing. They're pheromones, but bees can also do these dance. They have a waggle dance. They have different dances that they do to communicate to the other bees where there are food source, where there's other hives, where there's a water source. And so it's compressed information. So each bee isn't required to just forage randomly, but they're able to follow the trail. The economy also focuses on compressed information. It's called prices. Businesses use pricing and they use their sense of what demand is, which does influence price, to decide how much output to create. And we've talked about output is really what a measure of an economy is. And so businesses, all acting independently, are using this price data to make decisions. As consumers and businesses, we also have self-interest. We want to maximize our well-being. We're also emotional. We want to maximize our well-being, but we also want things to be fair. If we see that something isn't fair, it does great on us. It's very, very upsetting. And so we need an equilibrium, because we can't have all this self-interest where it leads to unfairness. And so fairness tends to be part of the system, the economic system. Self-interest is a part of the system, and then we're able to get these equilibriums and this compressed information with prices, and everyone's acting independently. This is, we've talked about in earlier episodes, is a complex adaptive system. Sometimes in the case of bees and anthills, it's called a superorganism. So it almost as if the economy has a life of its own, and nobody knows exactly where it's gone, because everyone acts independently. It cannot be predicted. It is extremely innovative in terms of radically unpredictable and innovative in terms of how the economy evolves. But there's an aspect to the economy that has become quite prevalent over the past 50 years. And sometimes it's called the network effect or preferential attachment. The way that networks work is you have all these different nodes, and in an economy, I interact with certain people in my local community. I interact with people internationally, and people interact with me, and they're connected to me. But what you find with an economy and a network, certain nodes tend to get more connections, more linked in. There are certain people on Twitter. Kim Kardashian has way more followers than I do on Twitter, and people see that other people are following her, and so you get the crowd behavior in terms of networks. They follow what's called a power law, where fewer people have more and more. And that spreads through the economy in terms of income, where you have certain people, it's not winner take all, but they certainly take a lot, and that creates certain aspects where people can get an unfair advantage. And it's something that it isn't that somebody is orchestrating from the top. Often it just bubbles up from the bottom as we act as consumers and businesses, and we look at these price signals, or we do follow the crowd, because we can't make every decision and research every decision we make independently. Sometimes we look for cues from others. So we might look at price, we might look at what others are doing, but we follow what others are doing to some extent. We can't avoid it, and that leads to this preferential attachment, which can lead to some inequalities. The top movies gross way more than the bottom movies, multiples of times and there's mathematical relationships that follow that. So we do mimicking, but it can lead to inequality of income, which is what I want to talk about today. And Diego Espinosa talked about breaks in the system to prevent that. One is competition. If there's more competition, ideally there'll be less inequality. But if there's less competition, what you see is businesses in their own self-interest might make decisions that actually harm everybody as a whole. One, perhaps, not paying high enough wages to the workers because their competitors aren't doing it and they're following the crowd. Another thing might be boards of corporations paying the CEO multiples of what the average worker works or makes because for the same reason. It's the mimicking of board members. And so if this competition breaks down, these higher corporate profits, oftentimes corporations can pay lobbyists. And the other break that Espinosa talks about is the political system. Democracy should be putting brakes on these inequalities that occur, these positive feedback loops that can eventually harm the economy as a whole. But if the politicians get compromised because of lobbyists or the way the system has evolved, that doesn't put that brake. And ultimately, what can break things is a positive feedback loop in the economy that is creating these huge inequalities and the lack of fairness that many feel. You can have a couple of things. One, you can have a revolution. And I'm not by any means predicting this. I'm just following things as we look at what's happening and you look at these positive feedback loops. You could have a segment of the population revolt. Perhaps we're seeing that or saw that in Baltimore, where a segment of the population just felt so hopeless and their life was just so unfair. And I'm not passing judgment because I really don't know. But you can see that if you get these inequalities, even if they bubble up naturally because of this preferential attachment, but if you don't, through the political system, have some correction for that, and the political system is getting compromised, you can have revolutionary forces, or you can have financial collapse. If the system gets distorted, and the system clearly got distorted with the housing bubble, and you had segments, you had huge inequalities of outcomes with certain segments profiting very, very well, and others, particularly those that were naive and bought houses because everyone else was, that got hurt. And then you had the banks themselves. We didn't see a complete financial collapse. The bondholders of the banks were saved. And because, to some extent, the lobbying efforts of the bondholders and of the major financial institutions. So what's the point of all this? Positive feedback loops happen, and they can push a system out of its equilibrium, potentially to where it collapses. Positive feedback loops can occur naturally, bottom-up, based on decisions of individuals and businesses as they use preferential attachment and just, to some extent, follow the crowd. It can be orchestrated by the top down as those that have done well seek to protect their position either through the political system or the financial system. What can we do about it? Now, I'm not going to be able to solve income inequality in this podcast because I don't have an answer. As with many of these complex, very, very complex problems, there are many shades of grays. There isn't, we'll just do this and it'll solve the problem. Just like the bees, the bee problem is not easily solved. But when we take it down to our level, what can we do? Well, certainly be informed consumers. If we believe a company is taking advantage of the system or is cutting corners or doesn't have fair pay policy, in our opinion, whatever that might be, then make a different decision in terms of where you buy. We are always sending signals when we buy things. I read an article in Fortune magazine the other day that is, the food system is changing dramatically as the big food conglomerates are losing sales because consumers want to be able to understand what ingredients is in their food. And Hershey's is making a decision they're going to stop using corn syrup and use more natural ingredients in their candies. And other food suppliers are doing that. So the decisions we make, the signals we send, which lead to price the signals, demand signals can change the system for the better. So we need to be informed consumers and find out where our stuff is made, how it's made, and send those signals. The other thing we can do, particularly financially, is don't be crowd followers. Don't do something because everyone else is doing it. Do your own research, figure it out, and then make the decision. And that will hopefully avoid, at least will allow you to avoid some of the consequences when a positive feedback loop actually crashes. So that is episode 62. You can get show notes for this episode at moneyfortherestofus.net. I actually just redesigned the site. So brand new site design. Hopefully there's some additional things I can add to it because I completely switched the platform. In fact, the theme and the design of the site I'm going to carry over when I redo the Money for the Rest of Us hub. So go to moneyfortherestofus.net. You can see the site. That's also where you can sign up for my Insider's Guide. And I'll email those show notes to you weekly. I'm also emailing a summary article of each week's episode as well as other valuable content. You can sign up for that there. It's almost at the end of June. Just a reminder, I'll be closing the Money for the Rest of Us hub to new members at the end of this month. Existing members will continue to enjoy the benefits of that, but I want to restructure the hub so that we have a much better comprehensive onboarding process for new members as they focus on better managing their investments, adjusting their portfolios based on market conditions. And so you can go ahead and sign up for that or explore it at moneyfortherestofushub.com. Everything I've shared with you in this episode is for general education only. I have not provided any type of investment advice. I'm simply providing general education on money, investing in the economy. Thanks to all those that have left reviews. If you have any questions, you can email me, jd@jdavidstein.com. Have a great week.